Hi, this is Jonah Treeblosser. Welcome back to another edition of Radio Rotary. Each week we chat with your neighbors about great things happening in your community and around the world. People applying Rotary's motto of service above self. And today my very special guest is from Louisiana, Kevin Wazan. Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, welcome to Radio Rotary. We're delighted to have you as our guest. And Kevin, we're going to chat for the next half hour with you about that oil spill that happened, maybe a little bit about Hurricane Katrina, and how it's affected the people there and also industry, especially our industry. Tell us what you do for a living, sir.
Sure. I'm an eighth-generation oysterman here in South Louisiana. I'm also an elected official. I'm a councilman for the Terrebonne Parish Council.
Now, we should tell people that a parish in Louisiana is the same as a county here in New York.
Absolutely.
And tell us how you said you're eighth-generation lobsterman. Oysterman. Oysterman. Oh, so you're just oysters.
No lobsters down here. We stick with the shells.
I've never had the pleasure of being in Louisiana, but I will as our Radio Rotary microphones travel down to the Rotary International Convention next year in New Orleans, or as my co-host Sarah O'Connell says, New Orleans. She is a South Louisiana native, and I should tell our listeners that Sarah is basking in the sunshine, laying on the beach in Puerto Rico, but she'll be back next week. So, eight generations of harvesting oysters, so I know how you got into it. You just saw your folks at it, and your grandparents.
Sorry, we don't really hire in the oyster industry, we just breed.
What does it mean to be an oysterman? I mean, do you go out with nets, or you have big boats, or what?
No, you have boats, and we use dredges. We dredge with the power, what you'd call a power dredge on the East Coast, but you got a motorized boat and dredge off the sides. But what it means to be an oysterman is to truly live off of the land. But land in this case is underwater. What's interesting about oystering is it's much more akin to farming than it is to fishing. Oysters don't move. I mean, once they find a spot in the world and live, they never move their entire lives. So for us, we can plant oysters, which means we get them to grow in a certain area. We can harvest oysters, and we have a crop that's sitting out under the water. The difference between our crop and the typical farmer that you see out in the world, however, is that our crop is underwater and you can't see it. We just kind of have to know it's there.
And this is you don't have one man operation with this boat. You have a number of of employees, correct?
Sure. There's almost 200 people that helped to make this happen.
All right. So New Orleans, of course, and Louisiana have been suffering the 1-2 punch. Katrina, about 5 years ago or so, the great hurricane that flooded so much of New Orleans and caused tremendous damage and economic problems and heartache. And then suddenly we have the BP oil spill. How were you personally affected, first by Katrina and then by the BP oil spill?
Katrina was an amazing event. I mean, the devastation and the impact on people's lives is something that those of us who saw it and lived it firsthand understand. And no matter how much talking, you can never kind of quite give it to other people. When I'm in a room with people who've never, who weren't here versus when I'm in a room with people who were, I do a lot more talking with the people who weren't here, but I do a lot more understanding with the people who were. There's just no way to quantify what it's like to see 225,000 homes destroyed in one day. Where with the BP oil spill, with the BP oil spill is very different. The BP oil spill is very easy to understand. In fact, in some ways, in Hurricane Katrina, you could take 10,000 pictures of Hurricane Katrina and not tell the story. It just literally, the story was too big to tell. You just couldn't catch what really had happened. The BP oil spill, however, has been exactly the opposite. One picture of an oiled Pelican tells really and truly more story than is even there, because we focus in on these few impacts, and Louisiana has almost, if you follow the coast, if you walk down the coast on the beach, Louisiana has almost 7,000 miles of coastlines. Of the 7,000 miles of coastlines, not even 200 miles of it were impacted by oil. But because the story is so easy to tell of the BP oil spill, now all 7,000 miles of coast in the minds of most people is synonymous with that 200. This was a tragic oil spill. I mean, there's just no excuses, and there's a lot of anger towards the decisions that created this mess. But in truth and point, it did not affect seafood the way that it was thought that it could.
Well, yeah, let's cut to the chase on this. You know, people may be concerned that if they travel to Louisiana and especially to New Orleans, where tourism is such an important part of the economy down there, or they are going to import fish and seafood products from New Orleans, that it's going to, you know, taste like putting your mouth around a gasoline nozzle. Let's cut to the chase, and then we'll develop it more. Is seafood safe from Louisiana?
Yeah, you know, not only is the seafood coming out of Louisiana safe, I can guarantee you it's the safest seafood that's ever come out of Louisiana. There's more testing and safety protocols now than there ever have been in the history of Louisiana seafood. We joked for a while during the spill that if they did any more testing, we wouldn't be able to sell anything. There was a time when we were sending almost as much product out to test as we were to sell. There's no question. Let me give you some, you know, people like statistics, and it's hard to see when you're not down here. Of the oyster beds in Louisiana, less than 5% of them were touched by oil. Less than 2% of them were actually oiled. You know, so less than 5% had an impact. Less than 2% were touched by oil. Now, there were a lot of mortalities in oysters, but that was from fresh water. The state opened up a lot of freshwater diversion, so they pushed fresh water from the Mississippi down a lot of channels to try to keep the oil away from our estuaries, and it worked. Now, that fresh water killed the oysters, so that's not a good thing.
So the oysters are acclimated to seawater, to salty water.
Well, they live in what's called a brackish water. They live in between the places where the seawater and the fresh water mix. It can't be too fresh, and it can't be too salty.
Right, it's very delicate.
So the fresh water killed the oysters, but it kept the oil out. So the oysters we're harvesting now, the ones that survived, have never seen oil. In fact, most of the oysters that our particular company is harvesting are harvested over 200 miles away from any oil impact at all.
Well, how did the BP oil spill affect your business personally? I mean, you said you have over 200 people who work with you in this multi-generation family business. Does it mean that nothing happened to you, or
no? A lot happened. We were the Motivated Seafoods is the only oyster company to keep open the whole time. We never closed, but all of our major competition closed. We were probably the sole person who never even shut down. We were very blessed. Our farms were to the west. There wasn't a direct oil impact as far as. What happened is you got a lot of government closures really quickly, and so people ended up getting shut down from precautionary closures. And a precautionary closure is a good thing. I mean, what it says is there might be oil soon, so why would we be fishing this? Let's wait and see where the oil goes, right? But what happened is we shut down the industry out of precaution, and then there was no mechanism to open it back up. Everyone, you know, hey, we need to get this precautionary closure. Well, how do we know when we can open it back up? And it becomes incredibly difficult to open something back up when it never actually saw an impact.
Well, now, who was it that decided to close you down? Was it the government?
It was the Louisiana Department of Health in chorus with the FDA and in chorus with what we have here, something called the Louisiana Oyster Task Force, which is the industry arm and the industry voice in these regulations. And the entire industry was in favor of the precautionary closures. The last thing we want to do is ship out a product that's been tainted. So it was with industry support that we put the closures in. There was no problem with that. I mean, we needed to do it, obviously. It needed to be done. What's interesting, though, is the oil in 90% of the cases just never showed up.
Up here in the north, if you watch any of the news programs or the Sunday discussion programs, there are a lot of commercials courtesy of British Petroleum showing that they've opened up their checkbook to reimburse industries and you know, sports fishing boating captains who may have lost income because of the oil spill. Have they stepped up to the plate to try and rescue your industry, the oyster and seafood industry?
They're stepping up to the plate. There's a lot of what we call oil fare out here right now.
As opposed to welfare.
A lot of checks being cut. You know, some of it very much needed and some of it very, very good. Some of it, you know, what we find is actually places are sometimes losing employees who've gotten settlement checks, and the settlement check is for 6 months. So people are saying, well, I'll come back to work in 6 months. So there's a two-edged sword here. There definitely was a need, and there are definitely thousands of people impacted that without that help wouldn't be moving forward. But as in every disaster, you have people who will take advantage. I think that by and large, BP handled the short-term needs very good. The long-term needs, I think, is where there's a big question mark remaining.
And we'll explore those long-term needs in just a moment, but let remind our listeners that they're in tune with Radio Rotary right here on Hudson Valley Talk Radio and around the world by podcast on iTunes and at www.radiorotary.org. My name is Jonah Treboss, and my co-host Sarah O'Connell is on vacation in Puerto Rico, but she'll be back next week. My very special guest, Kevin Wazan of New Orleans, I should say Louisiana, an eighth-generation oyster fisherman, and he's telling us about the impact of the BP oil spill and how things are down there today. And let me remind you that Radio Rotary is brought to you by Rotary International, Hudson Valley's Rotary District 7210, and the Rotary Clubs of Arlington, Cairo, Chester, Chestnut Ridge, Congress Valley Cottage, Fishkill, Goshen, Highland Park, Highland, and Kingston and Kingston Sunrise. And we'll be back with more of Radio Rotary after these important messages.
In 1985, while polio was paralyzing 1,000 children a day, Rotary International committed to a goal of ending polio worldwide. Very soon now, after contributing nearly $600 million and immunizing over 2 billion children, the goal will be achieved. Eradicating polio worldwide. That is humanity in motion. That is Rotary.
Hi, this is Sarah O'Connell.
And this is Jonah Treboisser.
And we're the hosts of Radio Rotary, heard Friday mornings at 9 a.m. right here on Hudson Valley Talk Radio.
We have exciting news.
Starting in October, we're hosting our very own website, www.radiorotary.org.
Not only that, you can subscribe to our new podcasts on iTunes or on our new website.
So click here today.
That's www.radiorotary.org.
HudsonValleyTalkRadio.com.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Welcome back to Radio Rotary as we explore the beautiful Louisiana shores and what's happening in Louisiana with Kevin Wazan, a eighth-generation oyster fisherman, who's telling us how things are improving down in Louisiana after the BP oil spill, and telling us about how safe the delicious Louisiana seafood is. Kevin, welcome back to the second half of Radio Rotary.
Thank you for having me.
So we, before the break, were talking about the short-term impact of the British Petroleum, the BP oil spill on your industry and on tourism and things of that nature. Now let's talk a little bit about the long-term needs. What is the future hold for New Orleans and Louisiana in your estimation?
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about short-term, and I think British Petroleum, and by and large, did a very good job with short-term coverage. I'm sure there were gaps, don't get me wrong, and I have no, that, you know, I don't have a big love for the guys who did this to us, but the short-term, they've done a pretty good job. They've stopped the bleeding. Where we have long-term needs is really in the ideas of marketing, because, you know, again, like I said with Hurricane Katrina, 10,000 pictures of Hurricane Katrina didn't tell the story. With this oil spill, one picture told an even bigger story than existed, and it pulled my heartstrings like anybody else's, but the reality was not everywhere looked like that. We had 100 days of people watching live feed of thousands of gallons of oil pumping into the Gulf of Mexico, and you know, feeds of oil slicks with birds mired in them, and these are tragic images. Those images, though, what they did is they produced in many people the wrong impulse. Very many people now, consumers, say, "Hey, Gulf seafood equals oil," which, as tragic as this event was, this didn't touch 10%. It didn't even touch 10% of the seafood in the Gulf. I would guess that if you were to say of all of the seafood in the Gulf, what percentage was actually impacted by oil in this spill, it's less than 2%.
Now, and that was during the oil spill, and now the oil well has been capped, You're right. Assuring us that the seafood is safe.
Yeah, the seafood is safe. The problem is that people still have this impression from those 100 days of images. And look, I'm like anybody else. Let me give you an example. I've got some great oysters here from Valdez, Alaska. Which of your listeners wants to eat those right now? Now, mm-hmm. I would guess that a lot of people listening to this took pause. I'm not sure if that's safe. You know, Valdez, Alaska was 21 years ago, and we still have
from
that
from the Exxon
wonder.
Valdez ship grounding where oil came out of the big tanker that was run into a rock.
Exactly. We had a big tanker spill there 21 years ago, and people still will pause and wonder if they should eat something from there. We're, you know, now 3 months out of the biggest oil disaster in American history. We have got to do a good job of getting that impression out of people's minds and showing them that seafood's safe. And I'm not asking anybody to take my word for it. For goodness sake, don't do that. What we have to do is get product out there, get people trying and seeing that, hey, this was a terrible thing, but it didn't stop us from being able to produce great seafood because the Gulf is huge and there are lots of great products. And by and large, animals are really smart and they get the heck out of the way of these things.
Well, Rotary International is showing its faith in Louisiana by having our annual convention next year right there in New Orleans. And Radio Rotary will be taking our microphones there. And my co-host, Sarah O'Connell, who's a native of Louisiana, has promised me to take me to a different seafood restaurant every night on my fabulous Hudson Valley Talk Radio expense account. Wait, that thud you heard was our producer, Betty Renner, falling on the floor. She fainted. You know, Kevin, the last time that Rotary International had their convention scheduled for New Orleans, Katrina hit, and we had to move the convention to Los Angeles. So we are showing our faith in the Louisiana and New Orleans area by having our convention down there. And tell us, what's your affiliation with Rotary, and what have you seen Rotary do to make things better down there, Kevin?
Sure, I'm one of Rotary's. I'm still in the application process. In fact, that's how new I am. I've been visiting Rotary as an elected official. I come into contact with the people who move and shake in my community, and it's amazing how what a high percentage of those people are affiliated with Rotary. So I've recently started to come into the Rotary clan. My application's in now. I'm going to be a new member, and I've already been invited to this convention in New Orleans, and I look forward to going.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. Can tell the people in the membership committee that the host of Radio Rotary, which is heard around the world on iTunes by iPod, definitely votes in your favor.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll tell you that you know, one of the things that people can do, and I know that Rotarians are different than most people because they don't just say, "What's the problem?" They say, "What can I do?" And then that's one of the beautiful things about this organization. A lot of people out there are going to be wondering, well, what can I do to help? And I'll tell you that we have probably the best relief plan for people in the history of Rotary. There's never been a more fun way to help. What we really need is for people to get out and ask for Gulf seafood. Eat Gulf seafood. Go and eat some of the best shrimp that the world has to offer. Go eat some of the best oysters the world has to offer. And enjoy the product. See for yourself. Don't take my word for it. I'm telling you it's good. But, you know, anybody who sells anything will tell you it's good. To help, just go out and buy the product, and that will pull the recovery effort along. We don't need millions and billions of dollars sent down. We don't need, teams and teams of people to come. All the infrastructure is still in place. By and large, 98% of the resource hasn't even been touched. What that means is we just need people to enjoy it. People get out. Ask for it at your grocery store. Ask for it at the restaurant, and that will be the recovery right there.
Well, Kevin, that's a great idea. And as our Radio Rotary listeners are sitting at the kitchen table listening to us, putting together their shopping list for the day, they're going to put right at the top Louisiana seafood. Now, Kevin Wazan of Louisiana talking to us live. Tell us a little bit about the moratorium on the oil platforms. You know, after this great disaster. Of the BP oil spill. I think it was almost a natural reaction of the federal government to say, okay, you know what, we're going to put a moratorium, we're going to put a stop on these oil platforms because they do get knocked over in great storms. This one was a still unexplained fire and explosion, and they put a moratorium out there. Is that something the people of Louisiana support? Is that something that's good for you?
In no means. I will say that we added catastrophe to disaster. The moratorium was perhaps, in my opinion, the moratorium was perhaps the worst single response to a natural disaster I've ever seen, eclipsing that of Katrina or anything else that I've experienced.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a second. We have all this oil spilling out. We've had problems with these platforms before. What makes you say that it's not a good idea just to, you know, take a breather, say, all right, let's look into this a little deeply before we go on with it, and, or, in fact, let's get off of the dependence on even domestic or foreign oil and have things like the Nissan Leaf and these electric cars going around?
I think those things are fantastic. I think that there's certainly alternative energy is the future of energy in this country, but we also have to look at the reality that, that today that isn't where we are. Right? There is no boat to harvest oysters that doesn't use some type of petroleum product,
right.
No truck to ship it that doesn't use it, No plastic packaging that can be made without petroleum products. And although you say we've had problems before, in Louisiana, nobody lives closer to oil rigs than we do in Louisiana. They're literally, at times, they're just miles from our neighborhoods. We have had one event like this in my lifetime.
Is that right?
You know, so there's been one event. That's BP oil spill. It's never happened like this before. There are thousands of oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. Louisiana has more more oil production and more oil rigs than any other state in the contiguous United States. This has happened one time where it's gotten like this. Our population is about 30% seafood, and about 20% seafood and probably about 40% oil related. Many families have a fisherman and an oil rig worker in the same home. Some people see that as a kind of contradiction, but that's not a contradiction. Without petroleum products, I cannot harvest oysters. I can't ship them to market. I can't package them. I can't keep them cold enough to keep them good for people to eat. It is a symbiotic thing. If we had some other means of energy, if we had some way of producing the energy that we need, I would think that this moratorium makes a lot of sense. But we don't. And the reality is all the moratorium did is say, we're going to produce nothing in our best production area of the United States right now. We're just going to buy more from other countries.
Don't like us, right?
I'm sorry. Well,
countries that don't like us sometimes.
Many times. And I will say that we saw an immediate depression from the oil spill, but the moratorium hurt our economy way bigger. The oil spill, our economy took about a 5% hit here in Terrebonne. Once the moratorium happened, we had about a 27% hit. The moratorium actually created more problems. I was in the process of selling the house. We had several people looking. We had not one person look at the house during the moratorium. The moratorium was lifted, and we got a contract on the house within a week.
All right, so people are going back to work.
They're coming back to work. They're optimistic.
Into restaurants and ordering your oysters.
Well, that's what we're hoping. That's what we're hoping. I will tell you I think a lot of people would expect that the seafood community would be against the moratorium and against the oil industry, and that's just not the truth. That we have to work together. Without oil, I can't get my product. Now, I hope one day that there is a solar-powered boat or that there is some fancy new thing that runs on seawater that means we don't have to use petroleum products. And I want to push for that as fast as anybody. But the reality is that even the telephone I'm talking to you on can't exist without petroleum products. And so we've got to learn to live together.
Well, Kevin Wazan, that's a wonderful way to end our half-hour interview. But just remind people, what's the best way to help bring Louisiana and New Orleans area back on its feet economically?
As it has been for generations, the best way to help Louisiana and New Orleans is to get out and have a great time eating Louisiana seafood.
Well, Kevin Wazan, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Rotary. Radio Rotary is brought to you this week by Rotary International, Hudson Valley's Rotary District 7210, and the Rotary Clubs of Millbrook, Newburgh, New Paltz, New Windsor Cornwall, North Rockland, Pleasant Valley, Port Jervis, Poughkeepsie, my home club of Red Hook, Hi Guys, Rhinebeck, and Southern Ulster. For the vacationing Sarah O'Connell, this is Jonah Treibwasser. Thank you for tuning in and reminding you to join us again next Friday morning at 9 for another edition of Radio Rotary right here on Hudson Valley Talk Radio.
What would you do if a friend, coworker, or a loved one collapsed? Calling 911 alone will not be enough. Over 1,000 people a day die from sudden cardiac arrest. Many can be saved with early intervention. HealthSave offers CPR courses on a daily basis at our facility in Rockland County. We'll come to your home or business if you prefer. Call us toll-free at 877-277-6233. That's 877-277-6233. Or visit our website at healthsave.com. That's HEALTHSAV.com. Leave the E off of save for emergencies. CPR training is for everyone. Learn CPR. Become a lifesaver.